Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths. It is my pleasure to welcome IQ Al-Rasooli. IQ is the author of Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam. He is, in my opinion, the most informed, most credible, a most articulate spokesperson in the world relative to the direct connection between Islam and terrorism. He was born in Iraq and therefore has a perspective on the world that is uncommon for most today. And he's one of the few people who actually has the courage to speak out against the religion that typically attempts to assassinate those who tell the truth about it. Welcome, IQ.
Thank you for having me.
I'm always my pleasure. I've got a few questions for you today.
Yes,
today we're told that Arab and Muslim are synonymous. In fact, when you attack Islam, you're repainted as a racist because Muslims will cloak themselves in an Arab identity. Was Arab and Muslim always synonymous?
Never. The Arabs before Islam, the Arabs before Muhammad, in fact, had more decency, more freedom, more egalitarian, and more honor than they became when they became Muslims. It's a fact. By the way, I've got it on my website.
Yeah, in fact, I'm just interesting here. I did a bit of research and when I wrote Prophet of Doom, and I'd like you to tell me whether or not my findings are consistent with yours. I checked every historical source because Arabs at the time had Babylon and Assyria and Sumer, which were the world's first three civilizations. Sumer first, then Babylon and Assyria, and then Babylon again, and then became the Persian Empire. So you had extraordinarily articulate people, well-educated people, all through Mesopotamia, which would be both east and north of the Arabian Peninsula. And then you had perhaps the most literate people in the history of the world, the Yehudim in Yisrael to their west, as well as the Egyptians, which was an extraordinarily well-developed civilization with language and the capability of writing history. I was unable to find a single historical example of Arabs leaving Arabia to wage war against, to terrorize, to raid, to rob anyone prior to the existence of Muhammad and Islam. Is there a single case of Arabs being shown, and they're surrounded by the world's mightiest, most articulate, well-educated nations who chronicled every aspect of their history and the history of their interactions with people around them. Is there a single case anywhere in the world of Arabs acting badly prior to the invention of Islam?
Not as far as I know.
Yeah, you were not able to find one either. I could not find one.
Well, historically, there isn't. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah.
So we're not here to lie to people. We're telling you the facts.
Right. So when Muhammad created Islam, what happened first to the Arabs in Arabia?
First he slaughtered them. No. First he terrorized them, plundered them, and then forced them to convert to Islam.
And those who didn't convert?
Slaughtered them.
In fact, was not the first war after Muhammad's death, it was led by Abu Bakr. Abu Bakr was the dad of Aisha, the six-year-old that Muhammad abused, raped. Yes, use the right term, he raped. When she was between 6 and 9 years old and he was between 50 and 53. Now, when Abu Bakr took control over this politicized religion called Islam after Muhammad's death, was the first war not called, in Tabari, who's the lone historian of early Islam, Tabari calls it the War of Compulsion, and it was fought against Arabs. What was that war about?
He slaughtered over 40,000 people. He said, let's put it in context. The day Muhammad died, literally the day Muhammad died, tens of thousands of Arabs who had converted to who were forced to convert to Islam,
right,
apostatized.
Right.
Abu Bakr said, now that I'm in control, shall slaughter them back into submission.
Yes.
And he did.
And he did.
2 years, by the way. It took 2 years.
2 years, too. And so Arabs now think that they are synonymous with Islam and that Islam is their identity when they were the first victims of Islam, were they not?
Absolutely.
So if there's any...
Sorry, go on.
Go on, just say, if there's any people that should despise Islam for what it has done to them, it should be Arabs.
I agree with you, but they have been indoctrinated for 1,400 years to all think otherwise. This is the tragedy. This is the tragedy. He, Muhammad, for 13 years while he was in Mecca, couldn't convert more than 78 people to his religion, or so-called religion. And most of the people who converted to his belief system were either thugs like him, or slaves, or his wives.
Right.
His own tribe refused him. By the way, the Quran, Muhammad mentions it in the Quran, how many times they despised him, how they despised him, how they did not trust him. And he made them submit by terror.
Right, and that, in fact, the moment that he left Mecca, following the satanic verses and the wild ass ride during the night to Jerusalem, and he formed the Pledge of Aqaba, which was a declaration to wage war against all humankind, he became a terrorist from that point on.
Absolutely. He was the head of the first organized crime syndicate in human history.
Right.
Literally.
Yeah, and they terrorized their way to popularity, whereby the terrorist got to rape any of the women that they captured. They got to enslave and sell any of the children that they captured, and they got to steal the property of any man that they killed.
Absolutely.
And it led.
Exactly how he did it.
In the first 10 years of the Islamic era, it is true that there were 75 terrorist raids during those first 10 years.
Definitely, yes. It's recorded. It's in their books.
Right. So here you have Arabs who, up to this point, all of human history says were nice folks. They didn't wage war. They weren't thieves. They weren't barbarians. They were not vicious. Just good people, leaving other people alone. And then Muhammad creates Islam, and there's 75 terrorist raids. What happened then after Muhammad's death?
First of all, Abu Bakr for 2 years slaughtered everybody into Islam, to submit to Islam.
In Arabia.
And then we had the whole of the Arabs in the peninsula converted to Islam. He directed their attention to outside Arabia.
Okay, why don't you share a little bit about what happened over that the first 100 years following Muhammad's death, and how many people were killed? And how far Islam ranged in terms of across the face of the globe?
Okay. It is definite. Within 100 years, the Arabs conquered the Persian Empire, the Sassanid Persian Empire, the Byzantine Empire, the whole of North Africa, all the way to West India, and China, and Armenia, and then Italy, and France, and Spain. They plundered everywhere. They murdered, it is estimated, the Arabs and Muslims, well, we're talking about Arabs only, unfortunately, at the moment.
Yes.
But millions of people were slaughtered. Tens of millions were subjugated. That's a fact.
Yeah, in fact, many people say that the number is probably in the above 200 million. Because it's everyone from from India to Portugal. Let's say it was the largest barbarian empire in world history, and all within 100 years of Muhammad's death. In fact, there's some telltale signs of it today when a Muslim, particularly a Shriner, wears a fez. It's red because the streets in northern Africa had so many dead people that the Muslims had murdered, that the streets were rivers of blood, and the Muslims dipped their turbans into the blood, put them on their head as a sign of pride. And the fez now has become the red hat of the barbarian nature of Islam.
Correct.
And so why is it that that this religion, which turned good people bad, and then conceived and inspired the most barbarian assault in world history, is somehow considered to be a great religion? What's great about that?
I have absolutely no idea. Ask Obama. Ask the Western leaders that we have today.
Yeah.
They keep telling us that there was an Islamic civilization. They keep telling us that Islam produced something positive for humanity. I want to find out what.
Yeah, was there such a thing as an Islamic civilization?
First of all, it is impossible to use the word Islamic and civilization.
Yes.
Because nobody speaks about Christian civilization or Hindu civilization or Buddhist civilization. Why Islamic? Why Islamic? Well, okay, supposing it's Islamic. Is it North African Islamic? Or is it Indonesian Islamic? Or is it Pakistani Islamic? Which Islamic? It's a, the word itself covers what it, what it covers. The word is Arabized civilization.
Yeah.
Arabs. The Arabs conquered this world.
And not the same Arabs that were found before Muhammad created Islam. It was a very different Arab. Religion is the most caustic poison that man has ever conceived. And so the Arabs that conquered the world and killed up to 200 million people and were the barbarians of this that led this conquest, they were now subhuman because of the toxicity of Islam.
Definitely. Definitely. I mean, look at them today. Why are we exaggerating? We're not even exaggerating.
No.
More Muslims are slaughtered by Muslims. More mosques have been destroyed by Muslims. Mosques. Yeah. Forget about the churches and the synagogues and the temple. More mosques are destroyed by Muslims. And more people were murdered while they were in the mosque.
Right. Now, if I were just to look at Greece or Rome, for example, there's a legacy of invention. You know, the Greeks were the fathers of so much philosophy, of actually chronicling history, of democracy as a political institution. Most of the sciences have their birth in Greek society. The Romans are great road providers, aqueducts, plumbing. So much of the Roman conquest of the world left the, although much was bad, but there's at least a legacy of having produced something of value in those civilizations. When we get back, we'll ask about what Islam contributed. Welcome back to Shattering Mist. We left the last segment with a lingering question, which was, is there any legacy of great scientific development, philosophical development, historical chronologies that came out of the Greek Empire, or great Senate, or roads, or aqueduct systems that came out of the Roman Empire? Do we have any of that legacy from the barbarian empire of Islam?
If I may.
Sure.
Like everything else about Muhammad and Islam, facts and reality are contrary to all their exaggerated and invariably false and wishful thinking declarations. Let us examine the historical facts as recorded by the Muslims themselves and their contemporaries. In the Arabian Peninsula where Muhammad was born, the Arabs were among the most illiterate, superstitious, and unlearned, nomadic and semi-nomadic people that we call the Middle East today. Although surrounded by other truly advanced cultures, they had not even the semblance of a civilization to speak of. Why? They had no writing, the foundation
right.
of any civilization.
Right.
No central authority, such
right.
as a king or a priest-king. No government, no right. army, no civil service, no arts, no sciences, and no record-keeping.
Right.
The Arabs, under the banner of so-called Islam, conquered several civilizations on three continents.
Right.
Such as the Zoroastrian Sassanid Persian Empire, the
yes.
Byzantine Christian Empire, the Coptic Christian Egyptians, the Hindu Indians, the Buddhist Chinese. These were truly advanced civilizations.
Right.
It is therefore inconceivable to suggest that the Arabs could have imparted anything of value to the subjugated peoples of these conquered civilizations. Back to you, sir.
Yeah, that's true. As a matter of fact, the mechanism of learning, the way that we chronicle our histories and we pass on developments from one generation to the next so that one generation can build on top of the next is writing. Written Arabic did not exist until about 50 to 75 years after Muhammad's death. That's when written Arabic first came into vogue. And what's interesting, of course, the Quran makes all these claims that it is pure Arabic. And in fact, almost every important word in the Quran is Hebrew.
Correct.
The Arabic alphabet is actually the Hebrew alphabet. Same number of characters, same name for the letters, same pronunciation of the letters, and most of the Quran is in Hebrew. In fact, I've received so many letters saying, you know, you can't speak out on Islam because you're not fluent in Arabic. And I said, well, the fact that you're fluent in Arabic means that you can't understand the Quran because the Quran's not written in Arabic, it's written in Hebrew.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. I have a whole chapter about the most important words in Islam, in the Quran. 118 words in the Quran, according to the exegesis of Islam, are foreign words.
Yeah.
Foreign.
Yeah. And of those foreign words, most all of them, all of the important ones, are Hebrew. A few of the important ones are Greek, and then from then the it just becomes an isolated word here or there from other cultures. Now, the reason that all of these lies exist, where Islam has had to recreate every aspect of its past, there's this concept within Islam that is attributed to Muhammad that's called the legal lie. Could you explain what that is and why Islam universally misrepresents its past, its history, and its present, as well as its purpose?
Muhammad always told his followers that for as long as they are trying to expand Islam or propagate Islam, they can lie, they can deceive the other side, who is not a Muslim, whether Christians, Jews, Buddhists, Hindus, anybody who is not a Muslim. The word is taqiyya. They always associated with the Shia Muslim, which is true. To start with, it was with Shia Islam. But it is in the Quran. Allah tells them that they have the right to deceive unbelievers. And they've been doing it for 1400 years, and they continue to do it today as we speak.
It's interesting, the Arabic word here is taqiyya. And that's the Arab word for lie or to deceive.
Correct.
You know, it's interesting that that word has Yahweh's name in it.
At the end, yeah.
Yeah, yes, it does. Taqiyah. Y-A-H. Same letters as from the Hebrew. The basis of there are 260 Hebrew words and names that contain Yah. And here, in the Quran, Taqiyya, Yah is being presented as the deceiver. It is Satan's idea of a joke. It's just like halal is considered pure food in Islam, and yet halal, according to Yahweh, is Satan's first name. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're speaking with IQ al-Rasuli about some of the lies of Islam, and of course, one of the most important aspects of the lies of Islam is that if you look about how Islam has lied about its past, and its past IQ has presented as being barbarian, viciously savaging the world, destroying cultures, is there any reason to believe that Islam's future will be any different than its past if we don't stand up to it? IQ? For some reason we have... I'm sorry.
No, so, it's okay. I heard you.
When people are lying about their past, when they have to recreate their past to indicate their nature, is there any reason to assume that their future will be any different than their past under those kinds of circumstances?
No chance whatsoever. They cannot contribute anything decent to humanity. The only thing they are masters of is how to terrorize. Look, in the last 600 years, if they are such a great civilization, let us assume they are a great civilization, mm-hmm. in the last 600 years, are there any listeners to name 10 Muslims, not Arabs, 10 followers of Muhammad who have contributed anything for the advancement and or betterment of humanity in any field of human endeavor? 10.
Yeah.
In the last 600 years. You know? You can't find them.
No. No, it's because the whole basis of Islam is so upside down. It's so inverted that the perspective of a Muslim is so corrupt. Their thinking is so deranged by this poison of this religion that there is no way to reason to something that is better than what they have. In fact, would it be true that Muhammad never gave Muslims a reason to live, only a reason to die?
Literally. You said it. The only thing that Muhammad gave to his followers is that in the afterlife, when they die, having murdered people who are not Muslims, especially civilians, unarmed civilians, look what they're doing all over the world, always unarmed civilians,
yes.
then they get their reward in the afterlife, but not right. in life.
Yeah, look at almost all of the bombings that are perpetrated in the name of Allah and Islam today. Muslims going with assault weapons against unarmed Christians in Syria, or it's Muslims placing bombs inside of cars for marketplaces, or bombs inside of mosques or at funerals. So they're using weapons to murder unarmed civilians. That is their primary means of lashing out.
Well, 9/11, 7/7, Berlin.
Right. Right.
In Russia, in Philippines, in Indonesia, right. always, Kenya,
right.
civilians.
Right, civilians. So courageous. They go in armed to the teeth and they attack unarmed civilians. Now, is there anything in the Quran that would suggest that it was inspired by the God who created the universe, the God who conceived life, the God who authored the Torah? Let's just begin for a moment. Is there any accurate history presented in the Quran?
None whatsoever. Not a single item in the Quran that represents history. As a matter of fact,
there's a number of things in the Quran that are false in terms of history. In fact, it has the Egyptians participating in crucifixion. It has the 500 years before crucifixion was invented by the Assyrians. It has mythical cities that existed in Arabia that were allegedly destroyed by Allah. No evidence of any kind ever been found of those mythical cities or the mythical people.
But correct? This is only the beginning. This is only the tip of the iceberg. For example, Haman,
mm-hmm.
Haman, in the Bible, he was from Persia, but they made him associated with the Pharaoh of Egypt.
Right. He was utterly stupid. Just utterly stupid. Almost every historical statement in the Quran is invalid. For example, in Arabic, you've got the letters to write Yahusha's name. Yahusha was the Messiah. You can write Yahusha. I mean, actually, they have Takiyah. They certainly have the capability of writing Yahusha. And yet, they called their Yahusha Esau, didn't they? That's the way it's presented in the Quran.
Nothing to do with Jesus.
Of course, and Esau is a transliteration of Esau, the one person that Yahweh called out to say that he hates. Islam was incapable of getting anything right historically. So let's move on from accurate history. Is there a single prophecy that came true as predicted in the Quran?
In fact, Muhammad was not supposed to be able to predict anything. The Quran says that Muhammad was only a messenger of Allah. He was not a prophet. It doesn't say that he can prophesy the future. Aisha herself said, anybody who says that Muhammad could see in the future is a liar.
Yeah. It's interesting, of course, is that Yahweh says, if you want to know who is speaking for me and who is not speaking for me, prophecy is the way that you evaluate them. And if they do not have accurate prophecies, then they're not speaking for me. And if they have an inaccurate prophecy, they're the plague of death, and they're most certainly not speaking for me. Now, prophecy, of course, is the ultimate sign of inspiration, because only God exists outside of the constraints of time. He has seen our future, and therefore he can report our future in our past and be 100% accurate, because he's not predicting the future, he's reporting the future. Now, that's why there's no accurate prophecy in the Quran. Is there any valid science? Like, for example, Yahweh's creation account over 6 days, we look now at the cosmic microwave radio decay from the Big Bang, and we know that the witness to creation saw everything that was created up to the present time in 6 24-hour periods of time. It's stunningly accurate as it relates to each step of the way along, of what happened along the way. Is there anything scientifically that is presented that is accurate in the Quran?
Not one. Literally not a single item. Again, I have that on my web, and you have it in your book. Not a single item, good grief. Not one.
Everything he has a presentation of the birth process of humans taking less than 6 months, and that it begins with a congealed drop of blood.
Yes. Well, I'm asking the people who are listening, if it's a congealed clot, it's death.
Yes. Right.
So how can you have life out of death?
Are there not something like in the range of 15 to 20 variant conflicting creation accounts in the Quran and Hadith?
Definitely, yes. There were creations from dust, from mud, from water, from air, you name it. He covered it. Muhammad covered it.
So there's not a single aspect of the Quran that presents valid science?
Not one.
Let's talk about just valid claims. We've spoken of one already. The Quran claims 3 times that it was revealed in pure Arabic. Is that true?
That's not true, because 118 of the most important words in the Quran are not Arabic. Can't have been. By the way, grammatically, the Quran is full of grammatical errors.
Yes.
The Muslims will never show it to you.
Of course. Yeah, in fact, there's many hundreds.
Anybody who speaks Arabic will know these are not grammatically correct.
Right.
They couldn't be revealed by a God, that's for sure.
Yeah. The next is that Muhammad constantly claimed, that his wannabe God did, that the Quran confirms the Torah. Is not the Quran the antithesis of the Torah?
Antithesis of everything that humans strive for, literally. Literally.
Yes.
The opposite of everything that humans want. The opposite of freedom, the opposite of joy. There is no joy in it, there is no freedom in it, there is no decency in it. It is totally immoral.
As a matter of fact, the other claim the Quran makes is that it revealed to pagans an entirely new religion that was monotheistic. Is not every one of the pillars of Islam based upon the pagan religions of the Arabs before Muhammad?
Every single item that the Muslims do today, like the Hajj, the circumambulation of the Kaaba, the running between the mountains, every single function for 1400 years is an emulation of what the pagan Arabs used to do before Muhammad.
In the Torah, there's a cohesive story. In fact, all of Yahweh's revelations from the Torah, prophets, and Psalms are one cohesive story. Everything fits together. Is there any cohesiveness in the Quran?
There is not a single chapter that is cohesive, let alone all the chapters of the Quran. They are jumbled up. They are completely upside down. There is no sequence, none whatsoever.
Yahweh's message is entirely consistent. He created a covenant, and he provided his Torah to teach us about the covenant. And he revealed messages through his prophets to prove that he was God, and that what he said about his covenant in his Torah was credible. It is absolutely consistent from beginning to end. Is there any consistency in the Quran, or is the Quran contradictory?
Not only there is no consistency, it is exactly what you just said, contradictory.
In fact, the Quran is so contradictory. Doesn't it have verses in the Quran that tell Muslims how to deal with its internal contradictions?
By not asking any questions.
Well, and that, and in the second surah, doesn't Allah say that when we bring a verse that is in conflict with a previous verse, you toss the old verse into oblivion?
That's called abrogation. Yes. Al-Nasakh wal-Mansukh, it's Arabic. It's an important item. This is exactly how the Muslims deceive people who don't know the Quran. Al-Nasakh wal-Mansukh means to abrogate sentences or revelations that appeared at the beginning of the Muhammad's mission by revelations, so-called revelations, in the second part of his life. The ones came in the second part, abrogated, made null and void every single verse that was revealed to him earlier.
Yes. It's interesting because in Mecca, Muhammad did not have the physical clout to be a terrorist. And so Mecca is simply regurgitated pagan mythology. But when he goes off to Yathrib, which they changed to Medina because it also had Yah's name in the name of the place, when he goes off to Yathrib, he now has the means to be a terrorist. And from that point on, Islam is based entirely, entirely on terrorism. Is that not true?
Absolutely true. How can anybody say otherwise?
When we come back, we have Jason calling in from Toronto. He has a question for you, IQ, and we'll resume our analysis of the basis of Islam, which will lead to a final concluding question. This is Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have Jason on the line calling in from Toronto, has a question for IQ Al-Rasuli. Go ahead, Jason.
Thanks. IQ?
Yes, sir.
I recently saw in the news about actually a Canadian citizen that I guess he's been arrested in Somalia for beheading four of his sons. There's been a couple other, it was like a controllable homicide in Ottawa a while ago. Here in Canada, there was a Muslim woman that strangled her daughter to death with a scarf in Alberta. And I was just wondering, you know, what were your thoughts on, you know, why should we give Muslims among us the benefit of the doubt? Wouldn't that be unwise to, you know, associate with them, do business with them, respect them? Because, you know, if we can't judge people according to what they revere and what their values are, what would possibly be appropriate criteria to judge people?
You are absolutely right. You hit the nail on the head. We have to judge people. We have to be judgmental. Especially with people who hate 80% of humanity. I want people to understand. Islam hates, despises, and wants to either convert, subjugate, or exterminate 80% of humanity who are not Muslim.
Including their own daughters.
Including their own daughters. They cannot be friends.
Including their own daughters.
These people are in living with us, you know, they go to school with my kids, you know, and they're being raised Muslims. And I'm just saying, you know, isn't it about time we just, you know, stop giving them the benefit of the doubt? If you're associating yourself with this religion, you've declared war on me. You know, people need to get that into their head, like, you know, you can't just ignore it forever.
Jason, you cannot get it through their head. What you need to do is to get it through the head of Canadians who speak about legalities and tolerance. Well, how can you tolerate the intolerant? They are intolerant. So how can you tolerate the intolerant? I want to know. You're being very polite, by the way. I admire you.
Yeah.
I cannot afford to be polite. I deal with this garbage. I've been dealing with it for 30 years. I cannot be polite. We are destroying ourselves by allowing them to come into our country.
You wouldn't give respect to someone in full Nazi uniform walking down the street. Why do the same for Islam?
Ask your politicians, your clergy, who are tolerating the intolerant. in their country, in Somalia, you cannot go in shorts. You cannot go in a swimming suit. When they come to our countries in the West, they want us to behave in exactly the same way as if the countries they came from. Why? Who are they? Who? There's nothing special about them. They don't like our rules. Leave. Yeah, go back to your country.
The point that I want to make here is twofold. The first is that when you cease being judgmental, then you cease being civil. If you're not judgmental, you can't be just. You can't be moral. You can't be wise. You give up everything that is worthwhile the moment you cease being judgmental. And so what Jason is asking here is if we're asked to not be judgmental regarding the nature of Islam and to disregard it to embrace Muslims, then what is our fate? The moment you cease being judgmental, your fate is to be destroyed. I have a parting question for you, IQ. If you know for absolute certain that something is absolutely and unequivocally false, but worse, that it's dehumanizing, that it's demeaning, that it's destructive, and that it is resolutely deadly, are you being compassionate if you stand idly by while billions of people are deceived, demeaned, destroyed, and killed by it?
No. In fact, I'm aiding and abetting in continuing their misery. No. I should declare what it is.
All right.
I shouldn't be politically correct.
You can't be human. You can't be civil. You can't be just. You can't be moral. You cannot be compassionate if you stand idly by and accept something that is absolutely deceitful, dehumanizing, destructive, and deadly. And that's what every religious cleric, every politician, every spokesperson in the media would have you do regarding Islam. It's a shame that there aren't more people like Jason who have come to recognize that that is a fool's folly, that it is suicidal. I thank you, IQ, for being with us today.
Thank you, sir.